Then, as was announced, the topic of our lecture today is education for better living. Now, the subject of education has been threadbare discussed among the educationists, philosophers, thinkers, and possibly in every department of life. The subject of education comes up, because it is that which prepares us to even for their speciality. And in spite of that, it appears none of this so-called philosophy of education or the theories of education have come to 100% conclusions, because there are always conflicting opinions as regards what education means. As far as this forum is concerned, the United Lodge of Theosophists, whose founder was Mr. Robert Crosby, and whom we are going to remember next Sunday, it was he who took extreme pains to explain to the world that Theosophy is a system or a body of knowledge which covers entirely all parts, all sections of human life. And therefore, it is so broadly all-embracing teaching that it does not rule out anything that most educationists would miss. And the central thing that the educationists miss would be, according to this, is what is man? Because ultimately it is the man who is to be educated. And if we fail to understand what the requirements, the real inner needs of man is concerned, if we fail to understand that, then the education is merely tinkering with his intellectual instruments that with which the man is endowed. So therefore, broadly speaking, education is considered as an academic education, and then people do admit that what the life teaches is education also, about which we speak at great length. But what is the ideal of an education? What is really is concerned with? You said education for better living. Now the word better living may have many implications, many translations. Does it mean better living conditions? Does it mean intellectually brilliant people to produce intellectually brilliant people? Some people feel, and many philosophers feel, that it amounts to creating a very high culture of an advanced civilization. Because history proves that the greatest of civilization had behind them great teachers. Not only holy teachers, but really genuinely great teachers, like Plato, Socrates. So a civilization grows pari passu with the educational development of that country or of that era. And therefore, the highest that an achievement can reach is given out in a very simple word by Madame Blavatsky. She has taken a great pains in spending about 10 pages or so in the book, Key to Theosophy, as to Theosophy and Education. That section is called Theosophy and Education. And there she states, I think about first two readings, you have got it in your hand. What is the real object of modern education? Is it, she's questioning, is it to cultivate and develop the mind in the right direction? Emphasis on the right direction. To teach the disinherited and helpless people to carry with fortitude the burden of life allotted to them by karma? I mean, no one has thought about this. To teach these 100 means poor people, the helpless people, to carry with fortitude the burden of life allotted to them by karma, to strengthen their will, to inculcate in them the love of one's neighbor and a feeling of mutual interdependence and brotherhood, and thus train and form the character of for practical life, not the bit of it. And yet these are undoubtedly the object of all true education. There is this move to education is, they talk highly, high-sounding words, this is all parrot talk, lip service, so-called educational reforms are made from time to time, mostly by the politicians nowadays. And therefore, as we said, no true education is agreed with the other, because the very basis upon which the ideas of education are based are of materialistic nature. Of course, the second reading also says almost on the same line, it says a proper and sane system of education should produce, and what kind of result it should give. It should produce the most vigorous and liberal mind, strictly trained in logical and accurate thought, and not on blind faith. We should aim at creating free men and women, free intellectually, free morally, unprejudiced in all respects, and above all things, unselfish. The last thing. Which educationist will talk about this aspect, this idealistic aspect of producing unselfishness and then feeling of mutual interdependence and brotherhood? This is why we say education may have failed to a great extent. It is almost commercialized. We all now know how commercialized it can become. If it is to produce anything, it must prepare us to face life. Because education is nothing else but a preparatory period. But it doesn't end with the academic education at the school time. The student knows for sure on a personal basis, a friend of his was just appeared for his BSc examination and he was under the treatment of a consultant for his mucus colitis. So he approached this physician. The physician became very familiar with him and asked him, "Son, what are you going to do next? You have just appeared for BSc, what are you going to do next?" He said, "No, I'm not quite sure, but my inclination is to become a teacher because I like to teach. And the next best is I like medicine. And I would like to be a doctor. But what else?" He said. Similar question, "What else?" "Well, I have a choice between these two lines." He says, "Your education begins now." He says, "Your real education will begin now after you leave this college. For now you are going to face life. And life will teach you through the buffetings of life, through pleasant experiences of life, so many things that university can't teach." And mind you, this consultant was an MD and an MS. And a full-time practitioner all his life. Extremely compassionate man that anybody can meet. Now he says, "Your education begins now." And that he says, "By now you should have been able to have a very clear concept as to where you are going to land into, as far as career is concerned, as far. So you are not even sure about medicine or education. What it is, go ahead. But remember, don't stop educating yourself. Because the whole life is before you and you can learn from every experience of life." That is why we have got a very good anecdote we just came across recently. Joseph Hansen, he was a United States orator, an ex-slave, and a leader in the early abolition movement in United States of America. That was 200 years ago. Hansen was introduced to the Archbishop of Canterbury, who was so impressed by Hansen's bearing and speech that he inquired the name of the university at which he had studied. Hansen replied, "The University of Adversity." The University of Adversity has made him the man that he is. That means the life and the adversity can teach us much more than this. And even Aldous Huxley, yes, that reminds me. Aldous Huxley has written many books. He was especially a philosopher, particularly a social philosopher, as you might call him. And after writing so many books, look at the humility with which he says. It's a bit of embarrassment to be concerned with human problems all one's life. That he was concerned with all his life. It's a bit of embarrassment to be concerned with human problems all one's life and writing so many books on social philosophy and to find at the end that one has no more to offer by way of advice than just try to be a little kinder. This summed up the whole philosophy of life, and just try to be a little kinder. That's all that you could learn from all the number of books that you have read. Just try to be a little kinder. That's our education. Teach us to be a kinder, or it makes you a ferocious competitor in life. So why the failure? And why the failure? Again, the reading tells you, and no less than a person called Einstein, particularly talks about science. The third reading. Why does the magnificent science, which saves work, makes physical life easier, brings so little happiness? The simple answer is, because we have not yet learned to make sensible use of it, the science or the education. Not yet learned the sensible use of knowledge. In other words, when he was addressing the Californian Institute of Technologies, he was addressing the technologies. He was a brilliant scientist, and then it comes down only to this, that the applied science, which is direct, now it is hand in glove with the commercial people. In the field of medicine, in the field, even the whole educational setup, the whole, you might say, universities are hand in glove with industrialists. Supported and promoted by this commercial minded people. And therefore, the mess. So proper system, same system of education, where are we going to get? Now, coming again, the failures, and you want to see the failures of education and of civilized life? Look at the statistics of crimes. Look at full, what is called the mental asylum. The asylums are overcrowded. Our jails are overcrowded. Suicides are rampant. Even young children are committing suicides. Why? Because of the failure in examination. Or even the dread of examination. Depressions, stress. Has education make us a happy man? Or it has made us a slave to certain trades. Because education, does it prepare us for life or prepare us for livelihood? Maturity of the education, of course, is directed, especially the specialized education is directed to prepare you for making a living. Making a living. How am I going to make a living? In fact, a father who spends money to put his son into a medical college, he openly admits, and I know of a friend who told him, I admitted my son has spent so much in order to get him admitted into the college through back door. Why? Because it is a form of an investment. This investment he is going to earn back, and he is going to pay back my investment, and sooner or later he is going to make money out of it. Why medical field? Because here is a very lucrative field, called a lucrative field. So that you can make a lot of money out of this, or nowadays engineering, or this or that, all the fancy things. Nowadays, of course, intelligent technology. So, why enter into a particular sphere so that it can fetch you plenty of wealth? It's a kind of investment. See, education is investment in earning your livelihood. So, if you consider this with this background, why has theosophy emphasis so much better? And we speak from the platform of theosophy. That the real part of man, which is the hidden part of man, not so easily visible, is neglected. And no less than a person called Alexis Carrel says the same thing. Alexis Carrel, mind you, himself a research worker, a scientist. He says, education fails to expound the true nature of man. Look here, Alexis Carrel was a biologist, biochemist by profession, doing a lot of research, and he wrote a book called Man the Unknown. And he's trying to know that the known part of man is very, very little. It is as little as knowing your car or knowing your gadgets. But the real part of man has been completely neglected. And he spends pages after pages to show human biology, and particularly biochemistry, and says, marvelous mechanism that the human body is. And he says, I've learned from that mechanism that there is an intelligent purpose behind this human body. That scientists comes to this conclusion, there is intelligent purpose behind a human body. That even within a cell there is such extraordinary, marvelous arrangement of things that there is must be intelligence. And if there is such purpose of intelligence, what must be the purpose of this life itself, of the universe itself? So here is a scientist who, starting with a scientific bent of mind, comes to such high conclusions. So these are of course exceptions. But it therefore comes to this, that the true part of man is really unknown. And therefore education fails because the unknown part of man, the higher nature of man, there are higher regions of the human consciousness. This is something completely being neglected. And that is why theosophy is in the world, to give a system of knowledge which is made way with the most precious part of human nature. What is that precious part of human nature? That which is that underlying, that which is really precious, which is really close to our heart. Human higher nature. And it is about that we shall be concerned today. And therefore, what is good for man? Yes, that's another quotation. Look around the habitable world. How few know their own good, and knowing it, pursue it. I mean, how many people know what is good for them? What is really good for them? In that sense, that what is it going to fetch real happiness to? And therefore, the definition of what is good for man is socio-economic developments. Instead of producing, yes, immersion, yes, immersion said that the true progress of a civilization is not how much you have produced, that is in economic terms, but have we produced really good men, really great men? What kind of, he says, what kind of men a civilization has produced? What is the quality, what is the texture of man such a civilization has produced? If your country has not produced men like Rabindranath Tagore, Sri Aurobindo, great saints, great sages, then that country has failed. And that is why we are proud of being an Indian. Because not because we have got our GNP is very high, and we are boasting that India, great India, and we are all boasting about our achievements on the useless fields, on sports, of course necessary, ammunition, warfare, this, that and the other. But we completely forget the great heritage that has been left behind the great philosopher, thinker of this country. And this is what, this is the reason why theosophy became very, very, spread very rapidly when HPB landed in India in the year 1879. It became very popular because a foreigner started telling us the wealth of knowledge that is available here in this country. It is she pointed out that you have got scriptures which are not only holy, but which contains the science of life much more than any education can give you. That's her book, the first book that she gave, Isis Unveiled, was sold out more especially in India than elsewhere in the world. And she was so received warmly at Kolaba, at Kolabanda, when she arrived. the whole wretched large group of people went there to receive. People were ready to receive her because they felt that, oh, here is a foreigner coming to us. And her brother Kali, Colonel Walker, the moment he landed at Apollo Bandar, what in those days they were arriving there, he prostrated himself on the ground and kissed the earth. He considered this as the motherland of my guru. And therefore he kissed me. A foreigner having the humility, he was well dressed American gentleman, prostrating himself on Mother Earth, on Indian Earth, feeling the value of the wealth of knowledge that is available in this country. Now coming to the knowledge of, you might say, yes, we forgot about, what is the ruling ideas of the age now? What is it going on? We said materialistic intellectualism, commercial values, and now consumer culture. This is what we would like to say. So recently, our economic minister, he says he wants to cut certain taxes. Because if you can save your taxes, then you can spend more. And if you can spend more, that means you are pushing industry. And if you are pushing industry, that nation will prosper. The logic begins, consume more, nation progresses. In other words, you inculcate the kind of taste in our country, that you must consume more and more and more of less and less and nothing. Socrates, when you are passing through Mela, where a lot of things were opening, and a friend of his disciple came and asked him, what are you doing here? Because you are picking up things, you examine what is here, you picked up so many, you are windowless. What shall I say? Window shopping. He said, what are you doing here? He said, I am trying to see how many things I don't need. So how it is, you see, we really don't need things. You see, nowadays people spend their Sundays in malls. How am I going to spend my Sunday? The malls where lot of things are available, you can see a glamorous things available and you like to buy things. The moment you see me, I want to buy. Your children want to buy things. You inculcate in our children the buying spree, the thought, the thirst and hunger for useless tinkerings. And they come and show you at home, see, Papa, I bought this. What a sad state of affair. Achha, now coming to the true value. What is it that gives true value to me? It is the value of man, the man himself. The central purpose of education is man himself. If it is education for man, or is it education for the animal in man? What is it that you want to educate? And therefore, there are three views of man, of course. The scientific view of man, the religious view of man, and the philosophical view of man. The scientific view of man thinks that man is a glorious animal, or is a very fine, intelligent, social animal. And therefore, the law of the jungle applies. If he's an animal, naturally he is born with animal propensities. Therefore, he's a ferocious animal. Among animals, is the most intelligent, the most brilliant man. Therefore, he rules over the world. And therefore he has still survived. And the survival of the fittest makes him follow the law of the jungle. And therefore it is okay if you compete, even in cricket field or in the educational field or whichever the field is there. It's a ferocious competition. Right from the entry of the school in KG class to the admission in the higher institutions. Competition. And you don't care whether it is your brother, sir, friend, or is your colleague. You are a competitor. You are a rival. That is a kind of culture that is brought up. So now, the worldly wise people are clever people, if you consider man as a ferocious animal. Or otherwise, you are born in sin, therefore you are a helpless victim, that you must go to church and pray, and that's how your salvation rests. And a very narrow perspective of man. There is a great view of man as an undying entity. Because the real part of man is really undying. You ask any man, he doesn't feel that he is going to end. The consciousness is going to continue. That you feel that the death is not really the end, that there is continuity of consciousness. Just as you feel when you go to bed and you wake up next morning, you saw that even the period of these 8 or 9 years when you are unconscious almost, or dreaming, there was still something inside of you was still alive. That true living permanent entity man is the most precious part of our nature. For whose sake we are in this world? For the real life of man is the real life of the inner life of the man, the life of the soul in man, the life of the true man, the real man that is in him. And therefore, what is the purpose? The higher purpose of his existence is to feed that inner man, to let that inner man grow like a flower, unencumbered by this externality. No doubt that outward education may be necessary, that may be a preparatory period. It prepares your intellect to be able to think for yourself, to be a free man, to think. Rigorous intellect, as Guruji says. You should have a rigorous and logical intellect. You don't want that you could give you an intellectual dunce. You should think wisely and properly. Ramana Maharshi or some saint, he had a disciple. He asked him to go and buy a gada. He brought the water gada and he came back into a litin. The guru asked him, but did you test it? Did you ask him? He said, no sir, I brought it like that. I just trusted him, he bought it. So why don't you apply your mind? When you go to a bazaar, you apply the law of the bazaar. When you go to a marketplace, you know the dealings of the marketplace. So you must have intelligence enough to test at least the ghada before lying. So when you are entering into the world, as you enter into the train, you must be smart enough, at least the world is smart to that extent. But that does not that you leave out your true humanity. That humanity must be in front, or at least it is behind you, whispering into your ears. Remember, you are a gentleman. Remember, you are a human being. And human means to be humane. As SPB says, the quality of charity, justice and generosity should come naturally to man. Otherwise you are nothing else but the superior genus of animal. If it cannot come out naturally to you, then you are nothing less than a generous, superior genus of animal. That is our choice. So, what is it? That we are inherently, as the Bible says, man is made in the image of God. If man is made image of God, then it must be a godlike quality in him. And if there are godlike quality in him, they need to be nurtured. So what is the education after all about? To nurture that inner quality of man. And how? It requires a philosophy of life. Because you need some guidance, some guidelines. And that is why theosophy is in the world, to give us that guidelines. So what is the remedy? The right philosophy of life. So you have got that reading in your hand, it tells you. A right philosophy of life is absolutely necessary in the world. In the world, huh? But in the world, you know, the worldly world. If constant, steady growth is to be obtained. And when we say growth, we just do not say that there should not be material growth, there should not be an intellectual progress and excellence, or there should not be a social and moral development. That's not at all. We are not going to neglect it. But fundamentally, centrally, you must grow in wisdom. That you must have the wisdom to use that knowledge. You must have wisdom to use your wealth. Because if you don't have wisdom to use your wealth, you quit it away. Use it uselessly. So whatever the power a nation possesses, a very powerful nation can exploit that, can use it away and fritter it away, all its energies, into a false direction, unwisely. And ultimately that is going to be a failure. That's why great civilizations have come and gone. If you see in history of civilization, as Bill Geoland wrote in his book, that civilization could rose pari passu with the rise of philosopher thinkers, with the rise of sages. As the sages grow, the civilization grew. And when it became decadent, when religiosity and commercialism entered into the fray, decadence slowly setting human lower nature thing in the front, and there's internecine war between brother and brother, between nation and nation, and ultimate loss. Nature sees to it, it makes, as I said, the God makes you mad before he destroys you. So the purpose and the progress that is in the right direction, that you must have a philosophy of life to give you the right knowledge. And where is that you can obtain that knowledge? Where is it that you can obtain such a knowledge? This is also the question. And how are we going to educate ourselves in the right way? Now the word education, if you go to define through dictionary, education is made up of two words, to educe and to education itself. To educe, the Latin educere, means to draw out, to extract, and to unfold. On the other hand, there is education, which is based on the word educare, educare, to bring up, to rear, to breed like animals, even animal, to breed. That is, the bringing up means of course at home, and the breeding is of course in the animal farms. So that is a very poor definition, it's very good. But that to use, this means to draw out. To draw out that is the best thing that is there in man. And theosophy adds that third dimension to it, to induce. What is the word? I have induction. A real teacher does not teach through words, but through induction. You know how magnet induces put an iron rod, and with two magnets you can induce magnetism in it. That's why in this ancient Gurukul, the gurus used to take the pupils in their own hand. And they so induce in him the desire to learn more. First of all, the appetite has to be allowed. Our children are fed up so much of instruction, so much of information is given. They come home exhausted from school. Then you send them to tuitions. Again they come back with very heavy bags on their shoulder. Then they want to open up the television for the purpose of pleasure, for the purpose of distraction. They say, give us break. Nowadays the children tell them, give us break. They want break. And how? Through television. And then we want to switch it off and again homework. So our children in a rigmarole of this kind of educational life. So there is no appetite, no desire to learn, no thirst for learning. No feelings that I want to learn, I want to educate myself. Now, parents are ambitious. Your parents were driving behind them. Go on, on. Like the bullock, they are pulling their tails so that they can come forth. Sad affair, of course. So, to use is to draw out. And how to draw out the best that is in man? That gives out very beautifully in the two quotations that we have extracted. It's very, very beautiful. We like it very much. Robert Browning says, very beautiful. Can you imagine the great poet? To know, rather, consists in opening a way whence the imprisoned splendor may escape, then an effecting entry for light supposed to be without. That you think that the without is imprinted from outside. That is information. Factual knowledge. You can have a whole encyclopedic knowledge walking and walk. You can be a walking and talking encyclopedia. But are you a really learned man? So, to know means to open up yourself to that which is a splendor within you, imprisoned in splendor, so that it can escape, it can breathe out, the whispering of that splendor into your consciousness, rather than effective and entry from outside. And the second reading from Sri Aurobindo, the great philosopher and mystic, he says, nothing can be taught to the mind which is not already concealed as a potential knowledge within the unfolding soul. The knowledge is already there. You merely induce it to come it up, bring it up. So also, all perfections of which the outer man is capable is nothing but realizing of the eternal perfection of the spirit within him. All teachings, therefore, is the revealing of what is already within. All becoming is an unfolding of that which is wrapped up. Self-knowledge and the increasing consciousness are the means and the process. The last two are difficult to understand. But that means already there is a region of the mind, there is that higher region of the mind where the knowledge is already existing. So that means what the psychologists call the subconscious mind is not the real area where the true mind is harboring. That is not where to find the truth. That is that area of the mind which awakens. You know, once I asked a person who was very fond of poetry. I asked him, he was reading poetry after poetry, and this student does not have the taste for poetry. So I asked him, how is it that you are so fond of poems? He says that it touches me in certain chords of my nature. Although I do not understand much of what's going on with these mystical poets that they write, but it stirs up some chords of my life. This stirring up of the chords that you mentioned, you are by the way, and professor of economics, it stirs up a chord in him. What does it mean? It arouses in him a certain higher nature, which is there already in him, it seems. And the poetic instinct that was lying in him is now awakened. So that, maybe you are listening to a music, and an instinct of music that is lying hidden in him is aroused. And therefore some children, having listened to a few songs, come up with inclined towards, their ears are always sensitive to music. So there is already in us the latency, the latent faculties, the latent possibilities, the great possibilities lying in the central part of our nature, which is the real man, the soul in man. And all that we can do is to induce it out, to like the fruit of Krishna, which awakens the Radha, all the gopis, shall be awakened by that music. Similarly, you require to be awakened to that which is already that in us. So therefore the real education is not something that is pushed down our throat or into our brain and weighing it heavily so that people are tempted to commit suicide. The brain is so taxed. Children are so much under stress. Our young children, college going children, office going people. This stressful nature is because of this pumping knowledge from outside. You must be up to date. You are considered as uneducated if you do not know typing or if you do not know computer. But what is educated? What is the word educated? The word very, very educated means bring out that is the best in men. So the spiritual memory, the reading says, the spiritual memory comes up by the study and application of the philosophy of life. It's not there in your reading, it says the spiritual memory comes up by the study and the application of the true philosophy of life, which is given. Where do you find the true philosophy of life? Books. Books does give you, to a certain extent, information. Some of those marvelous books like the thinkers of this kind, the Dostoevsky, can bring out the best that is in you. And when we say study, what does it really mean? It means a very fine ancient word. Shramana is all right, that is listening. But there is a better word called manana. That is, you read one or two pages of a very nice book, then close it and just give a little thought to it. Give a little independent thinking to it. Try to even refute it. Don't accept whatever that the author may have said. How many of us are doing that? They are just carrying the burden of knowledge. They read books after books after books. Sometimes I know my little grandson. He goes to a library, takes up two or three books, finishes up and sends them back. Although he's very busy otherwise, but he wants to read books of this kind. And if you ask him what have you read, he won't be able to tell you what it is. So book reading is good. The hunger for books could be nice. But the company of the books, what kind of friends that you can make with you? In fact, there is one fellow told me that I go into a place, whenever I visit a fellow, I go around and go and first search for the library, the cupboard where the books are there. And I can size up a person from the kind of books that he has collected. Now that is it, we are sizing up the family. But truth is, the kind of company of the books that you keep tells you the kind of person that you are. The man is known by the company he keeps. So if you have got the books on economics, of course that's all right, that's the kind of person that you are. So the memory comes up by study and application. The real study represents a kind of a inner process by which you allow the inner thing to develop slowly. It may take a time consuming work. So that is no use going through the book casually, but really digesting it. For actually when we take food, it takes about 4 to 6 hours to leave the stomach. So digestion and stomach takes place, but at a further level it takes totally about 24 to 36 hours to get food digested. Eating takes about 5 to 20 minutes, but digestion takes 36 hours. So it takes, when we take in nourishment of information, we must allow the brain to settle down and allow it to digest. Fortunately for us, the sleep comes in. It is during the sleep that we digest the kind of information that we have gathered. It gets assimilated. And the word assimilation means, biologically, it becomes a part and parcel of your tissues. The food that you take, the anna becomes rasa, rasa becomes rakta, and rakta becomes virya. When it becomes virya, it becomes a part of your body. So similarly, when we take in the food, it should become a part of our very nature. So where is that kind of an education to get? So that's why I say take theosophical education. It is where the real man is projected. And therefore the philosophy of life will say, the man, the very word man means manushya, means he is a thinker. And thinker in his own right, let him think. Think and think and think. Encourage him to think. Let our children, when they ask questions, you ask question back. You tell me your answer first. You tell them and they are aback. But since I ask you the question, all right, I'll give you the answer, but what do you think about it? You'll be surprised, they may come out with a very good and surprising answers. This is the way to teach children. That's what we do in our theosophy school. So man is a thinker and he is a responsible thinker. Responsible because whatever the thought he thinks can influence him, can influence his neighbor. For man is made up of his thought. What we are today is the sum total of the thought we have generated, garnered, collected and introduced into our nature. So some of our thinking has made us what we are. I can make myself a very ferocious animal. I can make myself a gentleman because of the gentlemanly thinking. It is all up to us, the thinking nature. But then, voice of the silence says, the man, mind is like a mirror. Yes. And the mind that the man possesses, the man is himself a thinker in his own right. And he is the possessor of, he is the owner of mind. And he uses the brain tissues in order to think. So this is the process. The thinker behind him, the real man, who has his instrument called the mind, and the mind has an instrument called the brain. So the mind manipulates the brain in order to think in that, within the brain tissue, and the feedback goes back to the man himself, the true thinker. He evaluates and then he accepts that knowledge as knowledge. This is the process. So the true thinker uses the mind, and therefore voice of the silence says, mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust as it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. So if it is a mirror, it reflects something which is very high. But this reflecting surface is full of dust and soot. It is just like a lamp within us, which is surrounded by a chimney full of soot. Therefore, it doesn't allow the inner light to shine through. So the true education is wiping out those dust and dust particles. So the function of the education is to remove the dust particles that are accumulated. And of course, we have got very little time, but we would like to end with what we are teaching our Theosophy School children, the poem. It is called Theosophy School Poem. We are lucky to have come across it in our young days, and we would like our children to learn this poem. And it begins this way. It calls them children of light, addressing every child as children of light. The very first impression on child's mind is that you are not an animal, but you are a child of light. Children of light, as you go forth, as if you are going out into the world, as you go forth into the world, seek what? To render gentle service to all that lives. The first duty. As you go out into the world, seek to render gentle service to all that lives. Anything else is secondary. Then says, what? We have come in search of truth. Why are we here? We have come in search of truth. And that is how? Trying with theosophy. Learning from theosophy. Door by door of mystery. See, this learning from theosophy, that is a door by door of mystery. That you unfold one mystery and then you come across another mystery. So theosophy appears to be a kind of a mystery to a child. But it's not that simple. It's very simple. It just begins by telling the child that you are not an animal, but that you are a human thinker. And because you are a thinker, you have a prerogative to think wisely. You can think rashly, you can think like an animal, but you can also think like a man. And to think like a man is to think like something which is truly manusia. And of course, a further poem is there, we will not go into it. There is no time, so we can open ourselves to asking questions.
Sir, I've got to this third last quote, which says, lead the life necessary for the acquisition of such knowledge and powers, and wisdom will come to naturally. When we are saying for the acquisition of such knowledge and powers, what is this such we are referring to? The third last quote.
Yeah.
Lead the life necessary for the acquisition of such knowledge and powers. What is this such that we are referring to?
I think the whole burden of our talk was such knowledge. But not the useless knowledge, the knowledge pertaining to the true nature of man. Because all the decisions that you can make in life will be based on the central idea about man. As you said, whether you are an animal man, whether you are a sinner, a born sinner, or whether you are a real man within you, that which is the permanent, undying real man in you. If you have got this knowledge that I am a real permanent entity, and the real life is the real life, is the inner life of man, then that knowledge is pertaining to the real man. So such knowledge is the knowledge consisting of the powers that are latent in man. And if these powers are there already in man, it requires to unfold. And the whole process of education is to bring that out. So such knowledge, of course, it is from the secret doctrine. And the other 160 pages that Madam Blavatsky has taken up is taking all the pains to show the development of man from the infancy of humanity to the present stage of intellectual man that we are today. That you might call it from the animal man to the human man. And that if you have come from this animal state to that human thinking man, the knowledge that is required of that man is that which unfolds the inner potentiality latent in him. So it is, what is important is the inner faculties and powers which are lying waiting to unfold, and it requires to induct them into to the surface, and that is why wisdom will come to us naturally. Our reading from Bhagavad Gita also says that seek this wisdom by doing service.
But the source given is secret
doctrine.
Sorry?
Secret doctrine, the whole volume, two volumes of secret doctrine written by the founder, Madame Blavatsky. It was the second great book that she gave out into the world, and it is the very basic teaching on theosophy. So this knowledge that is given out in that secret doctrine, you can sum up this way. The whole unfolding process. Somebody asked her, what can I learn from secret doctrine? What is it that I can learn from the whole two volumes? Is it that there is a central thread running through and through, which is the real permanent nature of man? It is like reading the whole of Ramayana and not knowing what Rama is. So if you read the whole of secret doctrine but not know that it is all about the unfolding of man, the real man, that it is the story of man himself, that the man from this, the lowest level to this, the grand level to which he has reached, and now he is waiting to become a superior man. From the evolution doesn't stop at being a great and intelligent man. It doesn't stop at becoming a great man, it becomes a wise man, a sage. So the becoming a sage is the superior man, that is what is aimed at. So the secret doctrine, therefore, is that what is acquired such knowledge concerning the higher part of man. And so, sorry, we can't go further, but this is the thing, this is the theme and the burden of today's talk is. And why it's there today? Because, as we said, we are preparing our next Sunday. We owe it to Mr. Crosby, who permitted, who did not allow this teaching to be frittered away, but to be available, free of charge. That's why Sunday after Sunday we are meeting here, trying to bring out one or the other phase of human life, to teach humanity as to how we should conduct our life. And that is why we meet here free of charge, year after year, month after month, week after week, without a single break for last 60-65 years. That is the burden of melted burden of yourself.
Sir, we are having such enlightenment sessions over here every Sunday.
And it is said that the converging line of karma brings people to theosophy. Theosophy is for those who want it. There is something in you or us that has brought us here. Otherwise people don't like the theory. You can give any number of theosophical books, you can put it aside. And there are people who may find a book on the road, they may leaflet, and they want to inquire, where can I find this knowledge? Where can I find this? And they will come and study and search for the place. So this is available in India also, not that this is the only forum where you can get this knowledge. But such wisdom is very rarely available. That is also true.
Thank you, sir.